Yeah. Good morning, beloved community.
Good morning.
Get aboard the train. Love that. So, of course, I always love to start out with a question, right? That's right. Are you engaged? How many of us are there in this room? There is only one of us. Now, of course, we are the one center for spiritual living, right? And we are one community and a city of Chico, right? And we are one state of California, right? And we are one United States of America, are we not? And we are one planet, are we not? Are we one? But, well, some people, when you ask the question, how many of us are in the room, might say, oh, there's 60 to 80 people. So it all depends on your perspective, right? And I love this because I think you're stranded on an island in the middle of the ocean. And it's like, boat! And what is the guy on the boat doing? Land! So it all depends on your perspective, right? Yes. And in case that's not got the point across. Is it a 6 or is it a 9? Well, it depends on your perspective. And off the internet, it also talked about compassion and a quote from Marcus Aurelius that essentially said, everything we hear is an opinion. And everything we see is a perspective, not the truth. And if we don't do our spiritual practice, then what we see happening in Las Vegas and what we hear happening in the political arena, you have to discover your own truth, which means you need to do spiritual practice to go within to see your truth. When we look at our life, we tend to look at a certain frame. Our frame. My frame, your frame. What is that frame made up of? Our beliefs. And are all of our beliefs the same? Why not? Different perspective. So in our political system, and sometimes our spiritual religious tenets, we talk about duality. But I sort of laughed and go, duality? Multiplicity. Right? There is not black and white. There is a whole spectrum in between. My brother's a jeweler, so I always tend to use the metaphor of a diamond. It's one stone, and they cut it out in a particular way where on the top, you know, they're cutting facets, right? A cut this way, a cut this way, a cut this way, a cut this way, a cut at the top, a cut on the sides. And with those multiple perspectives, the light comes shining in through one of those facets and bounces back out through another facet, and all of those different perspectives create, well, what we call a beautiful thing. Why do we not think of humanity that way? We are each truly a different reflection of the same one light. So if you want to use your eyes, you could look at red, green, blue, brown and say, that's not one. Those are your eyes. Our ears are limitations. Limitations of the body and the senses. But if we do our spiritual practice, we discover a dimension that goes beyond our eyes and our ears. So, the title of the lesson, as John mentioned earlier today, is Practicing Oneness. Practicing Oneness. Let's start with oneness. So I have one body, but billions of cells, right? Right? And it's a really good thing that my heart cells aren't trying to convince my kidney cells to become one of them, and that my kidney cells aren't convincing my lung cells to become one of them, because I can't live with all heart cells and all kidney cells or all liver cells, right? I need all of those cells. And good luck to the one cell that says, well, it's all about me. Because it is a system. There is an intelligence in the divine universal spirit. There is a set of principles, a set of natural laws. And you can see that, so to speak, feel that in your body by knowing that, yes, there are a billion cells. And all of the cells know their purpose. They live their purpose to be a part of the system. Do we want multiple perspectives? Just like we want multiple cells, right? But some people get offended by not having all those cells look the same. So, can we practice seeing, hearing, and knowing oneness? Because if we look at the current system and environment, what we get from a very superficial level of humanity is not seeing that oneness, but rather seeing, you know, dividing by differences. Which really, again, by principle, weakens the system. So, what is our spiritual practice? It's to get beyond our eyes, get beyond our ears, because if we look outwardly, it's just going to be about the division. And we're missing out on the big picture, the beauty of the diamond. Of course, there's a saying that people have heard, seeing is believing. But what would our saying be? Believing is seeing. Ever bought a new car and then realized exactly how many of those are on the road? It's our framing. It's our framing that is, what are we looking for? And neuroscientists, long after Ernest Holmes, our founder, neuroscientists are saying, sure, we look for things that reinforce our belief. So where does it start? From the outside in? No, from about three lessons ago, no, from the inside out. So, page 219 of the Science of Mind textbook written by our founder, Ernest Holmes. Principle is infinite. And I like to think of principle as being these spiritual laws. And, you know, if you need something tangible like gravity, gravity is. And it's not that gravity will punish you, but if we don't use gravity the right way, and I slam a basketball down while I'm looking, right? It's not the spiritual law that was the problem. It was how I used that law. And so, principle, all these laws are infinite, but we shall demonstrate its power only at the level of our concept of it. Every day we have the announcements from scientists that they've made new discoveries about these particular principles or laws. Those laws have always existed, but we didn't know about them, and maybe we didn't learn how to use them. Meaning the spiritual laws have always existed, but we have to exercise that law in our own beingness, practicing that oneness, practicing. On page 219 of the Science of Mind textbook, it also says, somehow there must come to each individual an interior conviction that we are one, and that the Spirit flows through each of us at a level of our own understanding, recognition, and embodiment. For this is the way, the truth, and the life. So, how does one demonstrate truth? Again, in the Science of Mind textbook, by repeating affirmations. I am one. Dwelling on its meaning. Meditating upon its spiritual significance. Until the subjective state of mind, in other words, our subconscious mind, has it very clarified within us. So that's not just one drop. Repeated treatments induce within consciousness a definite concept of an already established truth. Even though the fact may not yet have become objectified, in other words, it may not have yet been demonstrated or seen. But this is why mental healing is scientific. In essence, this is saying we must practice with conviction, knowing our oneness. And by doing our spiritual practicing of that oneness in our consciousness, then we will walk around seeing it, recognizing it, being grateful for it, speaking to it, expressing it, because it will be embodied by us. But it does take practice. So, what causes us to see anything different than oneness? I don't think Greg Sullivan is here today, but Greg and I always have some great discussions together, and we were having a discussion that relates to this oneness. So, egg meets sperm. Two cells become one. And then what happens? They start dividing, but they continue to divide, and the cells continue to specialize, learning their purpose. Heart cells make up the heart. Spine cells make up the spine. Brain cells make up the brain. And a whole system develops to sustain this one life. An innate intelligence forms the embryo systematically. All the cells and the chemistry work together in an orchestrated manner and in harmony to create one baby. Or more. The subconscious mind is formed, and it monitors that system. You don't think about your heart beating. It happens. You don't think about breathing. It happens. The subconscious is monitoring all of that. There is no thinking about it, and yet the intelligence is working through us. There is one life working together with all the cells living their own divine purpose for the interconnectedness. Interconnectedness. Get on the train. And then as the baby grows, of course, the sustenance is totally provided in the mother's womb, the shelter, the food, and the baby has no awareness of others. There is only one. One love, one peace. Then the child's born, and even while they're born, you know, psychologists studying all of this talk about they still see themselves as one. And when does it start? Where do we start feeling that separation? When our needs aren't met. When our needs aren't met, we realize we're separate and we begin fearing that those needs won't be met. Essentially, fear is what causes our separation. And when we move into fear, then what happens? Again, a lot of neuroscience this day. And of course, depending on how each person handles their fear, like a child, your emotions take over. You're not self-aware. As a child, you're not necessarily able to take care of yourself, so it may look like a temper tantrum or a meltdown or something else according to the temperament of the child. But as we mature into adults, our fears over time have become lodged in that subconscious level, meaning we don't even know we have fear, that we don't even know we're driven by fear. And this is where spiritual practice and the practicing of oneness comes into play, meaning ideally doing enough spiritual practice, we learn to become aware of our fear and our thinking. And we migrate ourselves back to knowing the truth, which is the oneness, the wholeness, that all needs are met. And we learn to self-regulate. You know, emotional pain is different than physical pain. Emotional pain is different. I'm not saying you don't feel emotional pain. Emotional pain is different than physical pain. And again, through spiritual practice and us maturing and us becoming aware of our fear, we learn to see the error in our thinking. When we're in fear, we know the amygdala fires off. Where's Johnny Samples when I need her? And when the amygdala fires off, we lose the thinking part, the frontal cortex, into the reptile fight or flight. We need to be able to stay centered, peaceful, and calm in knowing our truth in each moment. So let's talk about practice. Practice requires discipline. How many of you just went, ugh? You know, of course, when we say discipline, sometimes people think about punishment, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about moving yourself consistently into action that ends up being better than the habits that you have. I'm talking about using the power of your conscious mind to overcome the false beliefs that are in your subconscious mind and bringing yourself back to love, away from the fear and into love, or fear to faith. Because your subconscious runs your habits. Your inner child wants to do whatever it wants to do when it wants to do it. And that's not always healthy, is it? Tisk for a task, right? We see some of that in society. It's like a child who wants to drive the car. I don't feel like praying today. I don't feel like practicing oneness today. So for the remaining, 23 hours and 59 minutes, I'm just going to let my brain wander into the fear of the newsroom, the newspaper, and anything else I visually run into today. It's living from the outside in, not from the inside out. So spiritual practice requires using the power of the conscious mind to gently, kindly, and compassionately set forth a consistent action that may mean prayer that will allow more of your inner wisdom to be revealed than what you may be seeing in your frame, allowing a healing of knowing the truth that will allow you to align with that being, to then demonstrate your oneness. And when you see that oneness, you can't help but exude the love, because there is only one of us, and in your eyes, it's me I see. How many of you have read the book, The Moses Code? Not many. The book, The Moses Code, basically gets down to, what did God say to Moses? I am that I am. 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 And walk in a spiritual practice, walk into Bidwell Park and say, I am that. I am that. That beauty, that life, that peace. So if you don't use discipline to do your spiritual practice, then the child takes over and you have the definition of insanity. You'll keep doing the same thing over and over and expect different results. So how do you practice oneness in the real world? So when I chose the title of this lesson, of course I didn't know there would be this mass shooting in Las Vegas. And I appreciate your open and vulnerable heart, because yes, we feel that. And thank you for modeling. Allow that to be expressed. That does need to move through us. And practicing on oneness takes an even greater importance and responsibility after such an event. And of course, there really is no rationale that's going to be okay for anybody's mind to satisfy why somebody would do this. And for anyone who has even an ounce of compassion, of course it's hard to accept the pain and the suffering now inflicted on hundreds and hundreds of people. So we certainly want to practice oneness by holding the victims and their families and their friends in prayer. And that, as John said, is our work to do, and to take it seriously with conviction. But let me ask you, who wants to practice oneness with the shooter? Anybody? That is difficult. That is difficult. So, a little story. Not lose myself here. As many of you know, I don't watch TV. We do have a TV at our house, and we watch movies and sometimes certain sport events, but Sue and I don't turn on the TV and watch TV per se. So what I have to say may be more perplexing to me than those of you who watch TV. So again, a difference in perspective. But I ended up at Enloe Hospital on Wednesday in CCU because my sister-in-law drove herself to the hospital and before an hour was up, took her into surgery to do a sextuple bypass emergency surgery. I call her the miracle girl. I hadn't heard of a sextuple, but apparently, yeah, they happen. So I'm sitting in the waiting room of Enloe. And what do they have in the waiting room? I just gave you a hint. A TV. And what's on the TV? Oh my gosh. Injury to injury. Now, granted, I'm sure somebody turned on the TV and, yeah, okay, the news is on. I mean, I'm not thinking that anybody's really conscious of this, But I'm sitting in the waiting room, and of course I'm being drawn into the TV because there's, of course, you know, my brain sees the media, the action. That's what our brain automatically does. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, do I really want to be watching this right now? I'm already in a state of shock. I'm already in a state of fear. Fear. The TV is reliving and reinforcing the fear, is it not? The shooter had to, underneath all of his actions, even if he had anger, underneath anger is what? Fear. Can I practice oneness with the shooter now? Yes, because I understand somewhat that the fear drove him to be separate from and not in alignment with love. Now I know where my spiritual practice needs to go. That's where practicing oneness can happen. And yes, by the way, my sister-in-law did make it. Of course, still lots of fear and therefore really needing to do the spiritual practice. And it's hard to do spiritual practice in an emergency if you don't do spiritual practice. Does that make sense? How are you supposed to practice something when you're in that state? So my gratitude to myself for, I'm so glad I do spiritual practice, because I can be sitting here now knowing my truth and being just love. Not let the fear, which TV seems to generate, cause more separation. I don't want to be guided by fear. I want to be guided by love. Outside in or inside out. So I'm reading a book that's called A World Without Fear, Release Your Fears and Reclaim Your Joy. Now, I'm not done with the book, so I can't give you a lot about the process or the results right now. However, I realized how pervasive fear is and how we continue to perpetuate it and are somehow attracted to it. Addicted to it. Yeah, I'd go along with that. So how do we practice oneness? If we discipline ourselves to make it a habit, to remind ourselves that we are one with all. And you may not see that fear in the shooter, but I know that fear was there. And that's where I need to go to heal that in myself, because that's where it must begin. That peace, that love must begin with me. Now also, for those that don't have a spiritual practice, you know this, but you don't know this. A simple answer for how we practice oneness. Breathe. The very action of being aware of breathing is practicing oneness with life. If you don't believe me, hold your breath for as long as you can. And when you finally gasp for air, the wise person within you might say, see, life is calling itself through you to practice oneness. Namaste.